Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo, live from Bonn in Germany. Coming up, South Africans remember the victims of Soweto uprising. But what does this mean for the country today?
It's time for South Africa to reflect critically on whether it has honored the efforts of the 1976 youth or we have forgotten about them.
And the African digital revolution, who's been left behind?
Most of Africa has been left behind.
When we talk about technology, which is something we talk about a lot, it's mainly something we talk about in the cities.
Plus another segment of our popular radio drama series, Learning by Air. Stay tuned.
Top story.
40 years ago today, the South African town of Soweto witnessed what forms part of its bitter history to date. Nearly 200 people were shot dead by police in the apartheid regime. Their crime was protesting against the imposition of Afrikaans as a language of instruction in schools. The demonstrations led to weeks of uprising that spread across the country. By the time it ended, some 600 people had lost their lives. Since then, South Africa annually commemorates the student sacrifice. Today, President Jacob Zuma is expected to address the nation from the township where it all began. DW's Tuzo Kumalo has been speaking to some of the survivors of that massacre and filed this report.
On a bright Wednesday morning on June 16, 1976, hundreds of children in Soweto bid the usual farewell to their parents as they hurried to school. Little did they know that for hundreds of them, it would be the last time they said goodbye. On arrival at school, high school students started to encourage each other to take part in a march of protest against the apartheid government's decision to force schools to teach all subjects in Afrikaans. Mafi Morobe was one of the student leaders who spearheaded the historic march. He insists that the thousands of students who joined the protest wanted to communicate one simple message in a peaceful way.
Oppression of minorities, of groups, is always exacerbated by the oppressors impose their own language on an oppressed people. And for us, we felt that it's something that we had to react against.
But when they arrived at Vilakazi Street in Orlando West, the apartheid police started shooting at them with live ammunition. Hundreds died in the unrest that lasted several days. There is, however, no agreement on the number of fatalities. Some maintain it was as high as 600. Sam Nzema, a photographer accredited with taking the famous photo of the dying 13-year-old Hector Peterson, still remembers how a young-looking white police officer set the tragedy in motion.
He pulled out his gun and he shot direct to the crowd. He ordered the police to shoot, so the hell was loose. Police were just shooting at random. I saw a little boy fell down.
Seth Mazibogo, who was only 16 years when he participated in the 1976 march, says they were shocked by the actions of the police on that fateful day.
We never measured the magnitude of the attack on us as big as having to kill children.
After the massacre, hundreds of youth fled the country and took up arms to fight for the freedom, which finally arrived in 1994. But like all struggles, the students' protest left painful permanent scars on many families. Antoinette Stolle is the sister of Hector Peterson, the 13-year-old killed that day.
Then I looked at my brother. I saw blood coming from the side of the mouth. I panicked. So as that man was about to put my brother in the car, he said, "Oh, he's dead." Hearing that, I was sort of like torn into two, crying in desperation.
But many Soweto residents today salute the 1976 youth for their contribution. Opa Muloto, one of the students who marched on that day, is now a coordinator of the June 1976 Foundation project in Soweto. He says South Africa and Soweto in particular are better places today because of the sacrifice made by the youth of 1976.
There's no longer separate spaces for white and black people. We carry the same ID. They've got tie roads. With us when we were growing, there was no tie road. When we play football, we're just playing football around the dust.
However, many say that although the sacrifice of the young people helped bring about political freedom, South Africans are still far from achieving economic freedom.
DW's Tuzo Kumalo reporting. And after hearing those voices, we wanted to find out what has changed since then. My colleague Jane Ayeko Kumet has been speaking to Ralph Matega, a South African independent political analyst, and started by asking him how relevant this day was for South Africa.
People are beginning to ask critical questions as to how exactly are we commemorating the June 16 youth, about the struggle they've put against apartheid. And there is a lot of questions emerging where you have younger people and even older people, some who actually participated in June 16, who are saying that it's time for South Africa to reflect critically on whether it has honored the efforts of the 1976 youth or we have forgotten about them. So we are shifting from the usual standard commemoration that one can say we have seen in the first two decades of democracy towards a critical evaluation where people are expressing very divergent ideas as to how they think this day ought to be commemorated.
Just to follow up on that, 40 years down the road, education issues in South Africa are far from being really solved. What changed since the end of the apartheid regime?
Well, I think that one of the things that has been achieved, no doubt, is the formal dismantling of apartheid institutional infrastructure in relation to education. But there is a lingering question that quite a number of black people, even if now they can formally, there's no law that prohibits them from going to whatever institution of learning they would want to. There is the reality of economics. There is the question of affordability, where students cannot actually afford to pay for education. And the context of this question, I think, comes with this, what has happened in the phenomena of fees must fall, where students went to challenge higher education, saying that it's still inaccessible, even if the laws of apartheid that prohibited them from accessing higher institutions and higher education are no longer there. There is still the practical hurdle of not having the fees, not having the funds to do that. This is currently the debate now where people are saying that we need to do more. We need to honor the 1976 youth by making sure that education is practically accessible to all those who are interested in attaining it.
That brings me to my next question, and it is, do students protesting against white dominance in academia in South Africa today have a point?
They do have a point in their protest, because what they're actually saying is that for 20 years, government has never come up with a universal program through which there will be this access to higher education. Government's response has been that there are some loans, concession loans, that are being provided to students. And the students maintain that you cannot use loans to correct the legacy of apartheid, which was mass exclusion of majority of the people. You need a much more poignant, a much more serious policy intervention which will ensure access. That's why the students are saying we don't want to pay a cent for education, and then the fees must fall altogether.
Independent political analyst Ralph Matega, and this is DW's Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Now, on Wednesday, DW closed the curtain on its annual Global Media Forum. During the three-day conference, participants engaged in hard-hitting debates, and among them, the African digital revolution. The issues raised included bridging the gap between rich and poor, changing cultures and traditional structures, access to jobs, equal rights and opportunities. But what stood out of the conversation was the divide between men and women. What's not propagating power balance between African men and women? A question I put to three panelists after their session. Katrin Lukhoff, founder and CEO of Niche Stream in South Africa, Judith Oviga, operations director of Akirakis Association in Kenya, and Costa Mwanza, general manager of Movie TV in Zambia. First, we hear from Katrin Lukhoff.
Gosh, that's a very big question. Most of Africa has been left behind. I think Africa's leapfrogged the digital revolution in many levels. You know, we went straight to mobile phones and transcended fixed line, etc. And I think what we're really lucky in that sense is that we come up and we're at the forefront of the digital revolution. And I think it's more about who's been left behind in their thinking as to whether Africa is actually up there, you know, leading that digital revolution. And then, of course, in our thinking as to who can we bring into that fold, be it women or people who don't have access to internet, even boy children, kids who simply don't have the resources to be able to access the information and the skills that they need.
Judith, is that the same situation from Kenya where you come from?
Yes, it's pretty much the same question. Like, most of the country has been left behind from the digital revolution. When we talk about technology, which is something we talk about a lot, it's mainly something we talk about in the cities. It's mainly something to do with Nairobi, Kisumu, Mombasa, which are the major cities in Kenya. There's also the issue when you talk about technology is infrastructure. Also, infrastructure is only there in the major towns. So how can we talk about a digital revolution when most people do not have access to internet, computers?
Costa, you're from Zambia and you run a TV station. From your perspective, who do you think has been left behind in this digital age in Africa?
For me, the whole interpretation of the digital revolution has much to do basically with the fact that it's an information age that we're in. All these gadgets and media, various media platforms are basically there to enhance various kinds of communication and information within this digital age.
Catherine, the percentage of women in Africa is slightly over 50%, right? But the disparity in terms of access to digital media is between men and women is incomparable. What's the situation in South Africa?
Sure, in South Africa, I think the statistics hold true, by and large. I think what more and more, if you look at organizations such as Cell C, who's a mobile operator, who advocates projects such as Bring a Girl Child to Work, etc., they're starting to do a lot of work to bring more women into the fold. And I think that's important. And an issue we didn't get to talk about on the panel is that public-private partnerships. How many more businesses are actually taking a stance and bringing more women into the fold, be it from the grassroots up, someone running a spaza shop within their own community, right up to the woman who's going to lead a company as a CEO. And it's important about the leaders within those businesses and the leaders within government to appreciate what women can contribute to the economy and to understand that by bringing more women into the economy and giving them access, we actually strengthen the economy as a whole.
We talk a lot about digital media and access to digital media. We don't talk about the output and the sort of people who have access to it and what are people using it for. I'll start with you, Costa, on this.
It's a person's choice, but with where we are now, I think we need to start using digital information or whatever access towards development. People can get educated without necessarily sitting in a classroom through accessing information on whatever, you know, platform. Africa is endowed with lots of raw materials and a huge problem of value addition in terms of very little industry from manufacturing to everything. So again, that information can be useful towards development and value addition. The revolution has come to stay. It's not going away, and we just need to be part of it.
Costa Mwanza from Movie TV in Zambia, Catherine Luku from Niche Stream in South Africa, and Judith Oviga from Archaeics Association in Kenya. Up next, DW's Learning by Air.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Greetings and welcome to Learning by Ear. This is a brand new 15-episode radio drama called The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. People have always migrated in search of a better life. Lately, it seems hardly a day passes without news of the arrival on European shores of hundreds of illegal migrants from Africa and other regions. These people risk everything, including their own lives, to get to what they believe is the Promised Land. But it's not only illegal migrants who are making their way to Europe. Some, of course, go to live there legally. But what is it that makes Africans to leave their continent? And what awaits them in Europe? For the answers of these questions and much more besides, stick with us and listen to our first episode called Dreams of a Sweet Tomorrow. You'll meet four young people from different parts of Africa. Chivasi and Linda live in a country somewhere south of Sahara. These two have been friends since they were children. Now they are mature adults in a committed relationship, and they've just graduated from university. Chivasi wants to settle down, but Linda's parents have other plans. How will Chivasi and Linda deal with this? Listen on as the young couple meet in a cafe in town.
Linda, what's on your mind? You seem to be lost in thought.
Chivasi, I don't know how to tell you this news.
Is it good news or bad news? It sounds so serious. Relax, my dear. We just finished our studies and we got good results. Shouldn't have a problem finding one.
I'm going abroad.
Linda, what did you just say?
Chivasi, calm down. I'm going to Europe to continue my studies.
No, Linda. You can't do that to me, to us. Please, don't go abroad. You can study right here at home.
It's already been decided, Chivasi. I can't go against my parents' wishes. They're convinced that studying in Europe will give me a better chance on the job market.
But what about me? I love you, Linda. Am I supposed to put all that behind me and just forget you?
Chivasi, how can you even say such a thing? I'm not going for good. It's only 3 years.
What?
And you know how much I want to be with you. You know.
3 years? Linda, 3 years would kill me.
Chivasi, stop being so negative. Come on. Okay, look. This will be good for both of us, for our future. And besides, we can always Facebook and chat online. It'll be like I'm right there with you. The time will go so fast, and before you know it, I'll be right back here with you.
But how can I be sure? Unless
what?
Unless you promise me that you'll marry me when you return.
Chivasi, it's not fair to ask me to make a promise like that.
If you truly love me like you say you do, Linda, then promise me this. Only then will I be able to stand you being away for so long.
Chivasi, I can't. I'm sorry, it's just asking too much of me. Everybody's expecting too much of me.
Hey, Linda. Linda! Linda, where are you going? Linda! Come back, Linda! Linda!
This is a dilemma faced by some African people every day. Should I leave my country, my wife or husband, and my whole way of life for a life I know nothing about in a foreign world? The truth is that, while some choose to stay, many do choose to go. So what will Linda do after storming out of her lunch date with Chivasi? Stay tuned to find out. But now, let's travel to North Africa, where we'll meet Farahani, a young man whose parents passed away, leaving him an orphan. With him is his friend Sule, a young North African man who comes from a family of local fishermen. Both of them are unemployed, and they have just one thing on their minds, Europe.
Farahani, huh? What are you thinking?
Never mind. It's not important.
Sure it is. You've been very quiet lately. What is it?
Sule, sometimes I just sit and wonder. When will we ever find peace in our country? The violence, the hatred, the reprisals. I lost my parents because of it. Sule, I'm so sick of it all. Come on, let's go down to
the show.
Yes.
Again. Farahani, I know how much you enjoy fantasizing about Europe. I do too. But here is where our lives are.
No. There's no life here. Europe is where people really live.
What? We have no life here. Are you dead, Farahani? You know, for someone who's dead, you look pretty alive to me.
Sule, we are not dead. But we are not living either. We are just surviving.
Surviving?
Yes. Every day here is a fight for survival. But from what I've heard, life in Europe is 100 times better. The future there is brighter than the sun over our heads. If you can make it to Europe, life really becomes life. Let's go down to the show and watch the lights of Europe, man.
You and your European lights. Okay, then let's go.
Sule, one of these fine days, I'll cross over to the other side. And then I'll really start living.
This is what Farahani, Sule, and many other young Africans dream of, migrating to Europe. Is it wrong for them to dream and hope? Judge for yourself as our story continues to unfold. Later that same evening, at Linda's house, Mr. and Mrs. Maraga can't contain their joy.
Thank you, Linda. Now, tell me, have you talked to Chivasi about you going to study in Europe?
Oh, yes, I was wondering the same thing. You two had lunch together today, didn't you?
Mom, how did you know? Are you following us?
Yes, on Facebook. It's there for all of us to see. Chivas's last status proudly announced. Do not disturb on a lunch date with my one and only.
This crazy generation. They just can't keep their private thoughts private.
This isn't fair.
Linda, what is it?
In sending me away, are you stopping to think about what I'm leaving behind?
Yes, nothing. There's nothing left here in our country. Just poverty, misery, and despair.
Mama Linda, let us give our daughter time to explain herself.
Okay.
Dad, Mom, I know that you two want the best for me, and I really do appreciate that. But my going abroad has already complicated things for me and Shivasi.
In what way, Linda? Did he threaten to leave you after you told him the good news?
That's a problem, Dad. This is good news to you, but not to everyone. Shivasi didn't threaten to leave me. He asked me to marry him.
Oh, typical African man.
Mama Linda, don't forget that I'm an African man too. I know that times have changed. That's why I want to see Linda pursue her career as a lawyer. Linda, your mother and I aren't doing this to try and tear you away from Shivasi. We simply want you to have a better life than we do. We know very well that this is only possible if you go to Europe. There you'll get the best education from the best tutors. You'll study with the best students and...
But I could carry on studying here. Why send me off to that cold continent, Dad? 3 years away from Shivasi? Yes, I might come home with a new law degree, but I might lose the only man I've ever known and loved. Ever since I was a child, is it really worth it?
Linda, your father and I have gone to great lengths to see to it that you study abroad. We've spent every bit of our savings to pay for your education. For you to compare that with the relationship with... What's his name again? Shivasi?
He's not
it's
just
not just Shivasi. Ungrateful. It's very disrespectful too.
Your mother is right, Linda. There aren't enough opportunities here at home. But if you study hard and do well, everything changes. The jobs will come to you. There will be plenty of opportunities and a lot of money to go with them. Besides, who knows? Maybe you like it over there.
Yeah.
Think. Your whole life is before you, my daughter.
Please.
But what about Shivasi? He asked me to promise that I'll marry him when I come back. What should I do?
Okay. Tell him you'll give him an answer when you come back. And he should not put that on Facebook.
What is it with you kids and this Facebook? Linda, you're an adult now. Please try to think and act like one.
But Dad...
No, please, Linda. Please, just do this for
us. With those fatherly words from Mr. Maraga, we end our first episode of this new special edition of Learning by Ear on the subject of migration to Europe. What will Linda decide to do about Shivasi? And what awaits her in Europe, where she is to continue her law studies? And don't forget Farahani, our friend in North Africa. Will he take the risk and make the crossing? You'll find out all this and much more in our second episode. And please join us in our online discussion forum as we tackle this question. Is it true that there are no prospects of a bright future for young people in Africa? Send us your comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/dw.lbe. Until next time, goodbye.
And before we leave you, a quick recap of the stories we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. Today, South Africans are remembering the victims of Soweto Uprising of 1976. President Jacob Zuma will address the gathering at a palace where it all started. Technology experts attending DW's Global Media Forum have been telling this program that more African women have been left behind in comparison to their male counterparts in the digital revolution in Africa. They also say most people who have access to mobile phone and computer technologies, including social media platforms, are located in major cities as opposed to rural areas. And that's all we had time for. For comments or suggestions, do send us a send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or you can also send us a text message to country code 491609575950. Text message number again is +491609575510. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. Until tomorrow, bye now.